So I hope you can hear us in between all the coughing and hacking and whining that you get from this poor, sick Judiciary Committee. Okay, we will start by opening a public hearing on Senate Bill 537. Council.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 537 comes at the request of the Oregon Council Police Associations. It adds police officers to the list of eligible public employees that may request the Department of Transportation substitute the officers' work addresses instead of their residential addresses in their records.
Okay, welcome Mr. DeLashment and Jack Evans from ODOT.
For the record, Brian DeLashment representing the Oregon Council of Police Associations. Yes, you did do this last time, but what you did last time is you deleted police officers from the statute. Police officers were one of the first that were in the statute to be able to have this ability. And in the drafting of a set of amendments, and we didn't find out until after the session, if you look at the top of page 2 on this bill, the drafter looked at the D there and said a police officer appointed, and they believed that was police officers. If you look at those two statutes, the only two police officers or categories of police officers that are covered under this statute are the state mall police and the Capitol Police.
Oh.
All other police are deleted from the statute, and they thought they had incorporated them all into one category. So, in essence, what they did is they took the state, all the other police officers in the state, and deleted them from this ability. This just cleans it up.
Just with a little work of a pen.
Yeah,
or
well,
a typewriter.
There were a couple of them last session, I'll tell you. Are there any questions from the committee? Mr. Evans, do you have anything to add to this?
Chair Burdick, members of the committee, Jack Evans of the Department of Transportation, we appreciate your taking a look at this bill. When we were implementing Senate Bill 373 at the conclusion of last session, we discovered that the police officer definition had been inadvertently removed, and we asked Brian if he could help facilitate getting that put back in. We've been working with a fairly cumbersome workaround. This provides the fix that we would need, and we appreciate your help.
Okay. Any other questions from the committee? Thank you. Close the public hearing. Open the work session on Senate Bill 537.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Senator Byer.
I move Senate Bill 537 to the Senate floor if they do pass recommendation.
Senator Byer has moved Senate Bill 537 to the Senate floor if they do pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. I'll carry this.
Madam Chair, I'd like to carry this one if I could. Since
it's your bill. Pardon me, Senator Byer.
Thank you.
It is all yours.
That must have been the quickest bill we've had yet.
Yeah, I think we broke our record on that one.
It's a mark to keep.
Okay. Now we will open a public hearing on House Bill 2047, Council.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2047 comes from the Education Committee. It authorizes the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission and the Department of Education to require fingerprints of persons who work in or contract with public, private, or charter schools that have direct unsupervised contact with children in two separate statutory chapters. It repeals ORS 181.539, which authorizes those organizations to require fingerprints in the one statute.
Okay. Are there questions from the committee? Are there any comments from Senator Walker on this bill?
No, I was just reviewing it. It seems pretty good to me. ACLU probably is okay with it. I don't see Andrea jumping up and down.
Andrea's shrugging her shoulders back there. Okay, any other comments? I don't think we have anybody signed up on this. Do we?
Nobody cares about the bill. You close the work public hearing and move on, right?
No, so. Right. We could beat the record on the
last
one.
We're going
to close the hearing on Senate Bill on House Bill 2047 and open a work session on House Bill 2047.
Well, I meant just move on.
No.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2047 to the Senate floor to do pass recommendation.
Senator Byer has moved House Bill 2047 to the Senate floor for the do pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Senator Walker, would you like to carry this?
Sure.
Okay, open a public hearing. Somebody start a timer on House Bill 2128. Council.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2128 comes from the Human Services and Women's Wellness Committee. Reauthorize the Sexual Assault Victims Emergency Medical Response Fund by repealing the January 1st, 2008 sunset date. It also extends the time for the Attorney General to report to the Legislative Assembly on the operation of the SAVE Fund to January 31st, 2009.
Okay, we have Cynthia Stinson signed up. Talk fast, you're going for a record here.
Good afternoon.
Just kidding.
Verdict members of the committee, for the record, my name is Cynthia Stinson from the Department of Justice Crime Victims Assistance Section, and I would be very happy to continue your record for length of time for hearings today. I'm here today to talk with you about and to speak in support of House Bill 2128. As counsel said, the House bill repeals a sunset on the Sexual Assault Victims Emergency Response, or SAVE Fund, as we call it. As you may remember from my testimony last week about the Crime Victims Assistance Section, we have essentially two programs in our section. One is crime victims compensation. The other is victim assistance, which includes grants and the address confidentiality program. I've provided a summary of those programs, again, in the blue sheet. But this program, the SAVE Fund, is administered through our Crime Victims Compensation Program. And this significant piece of legislation was introduced through the work of the Attorney General's Sexual Assault Task Force in 2003, and the fund became operational March 4th of 2004. The creation of the SAVE Fund by the 2003 legislative session repealed a statute that required law enforcement agencies to pay for the forensic medical evidence collections in cases of sexual assault. Prior to the establishment of the fund, law enforcement agencies, because the mandate was unfunded, were responsible for authorizing and paying for these forensic exams, but they were not authorized to pay for the medical part of the exam. And as a result, law enforcement jurisdictions often face budgetary challenges and constraints, and victims are not consistently receiving these sexual assault exams or adequate medical care in the aftermath of sexual assault. The goal of the SAVE Fund is to encourage appropriate medical care for victims of sexual assault by providing a stable, confidential means of payment for such exams, which can include collection of forensic evidence. From March of 2004 through February 28th of 2007, or 35 months, 1,393 victims of sexual assault have accessed the services paid by the fund, and that's just under 40 victims a month on average accessing the fund. Victims are receiving medical assessments, and forensic evidence is collected regardless of ability to pay, either by the victim or by the law enforcement agency. Victims are receiving medical assessments regardless of whether they report to law enforcement, and quality is assured through increased utilization of certified sexual assault nurse examiners, or SANEs. In addition, no general fund monies are used to support this fund. As a result of a public-private partnership between individuals, hospitals, insurance companies, and Department of Justice that are recognizing the benefits of this service to individuals and the healthcare system as a whole, those individuals and hospitals have contributed over $80,000 to the functioning of the SAVE Fund. So I urge you to pass 2128 and maintain this important service to victims of sexual assault. And I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Did this have any opposition in the House?
No, it did not.
Okay. And it has this fiscal impact statement, just for the record, because it's other funds and federal funds. It doesn't need a Ways and Means referral.
It's my understanding that it does not.
Okay. All right.
Any questions?
Senator Walker.
Thank you. I remember this legislation. I just don't remember the testimony. So tell me, if you would, please, why 486 of the applicants to the fund who had private insurance didn't bill through their private insurance? Because it looks to me like that came to $190,000.
Chair Burdick, Senator Walker, a very good question. In cases of sexual assault, unlike many other crimes, victims are very reluctant often to tell anyone that they've experienced a sexual assault. It becomes very awkward and sometimes dangerous for victims to use their insurance for medical care associated with a sexual assault because they may have a partner living in their home that they don't want to know about that visit to the emergency room. And so this was a way to ensure that victims would be able to get adequate medical care without having to alert someone that they didn't want to know about their use of insurance.
That rings true to my recollection now, so thank you. But I did want to just get that on the record because it's a sizable sum of money that we're not having the insurance companies pay. But, Madam Chair, I also note on the second page of her testimony, she indicates the fund was created as a public-private partnership, and since its inception, over $81,000 has been donated from private citizens, hospitals, and insurance companies. So I'm glad to see that they are stepping up with their share. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Cruz, did you have a question?
No.
Okay. Any other questions, Senator Beyer?
Thank you. Section 4 of the bill dealing with the report, I assume it must have been a report done in 2005. Why is it we want to have another report done? If there was one done, why do we want another one done in 2009?
Chair Burdick, excuse me, Senator Beyer, it was our feeling that the legislature deserved to know about the success of this fund, and especially since it is this kind of unusual public-private partnership, we wanted to be able to report on its continued success.
And so my assumption was correct. There was a report done in 2005.
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
All right. Other questions from the committee? Okay, thank you. Anybody else want to talk on this back there? Okay, we'll close the hearing on House Bill 2128 and open a work session on House Bill 2128. Senator Beyer.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2128 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Beyer has moved House Bill 2128 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Senator Cruz, would you like to carry this?
Sure.
Okay. All right, we will now open a public hearing on House Bill 2227. Council.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2227 comes to us from the Government Accountability and Information Technology Committee. It repeals the requirement that licensed polygraph examiners register with the county clerk in each county where the examiner maintains a business address.
Okay. We have Marilyn Lawrence from the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training.
It's a really short bill.
Yeah, it's the shortest bill I've ever seen.
Maybe this will break the record. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Marilyn Lawrence. I oversee the Standards and Certification Program for the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training. Chair Burdick and members of the committee, Oregon's polygraph licensing program has been in place since 1975 and is currently administered by the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training. Since the program began, licensed polygraph examiners have been required to register with the county clerk in each county in which they do business. In late 2005, the Polygraph Licensing Advisory Committee, which advises the department in matters relating to polygraph licensure, raised this provision of the statute and questioned its need to continue to be in existence. They recommended that it be considered for repeal. They could not find an identified current purpose to have it in place. Based on their request, I contacted the organization that represents Oregon's county clerks, asked them to discuss the matter. They raised it at their 2006 annual meeting and concurred with the department and with the Polygraph Advisory Committee that it did not serve a current purpose. So the bill is before you to simply remove a provision that seems to no longer serve a recognized public need. Information on polygraph licensed polygraph examiners is available on our agency's website, is updated regularly, and so the information is far more current through our department than it would be through a county clerk's office.
So this is another another example of the legislature trying to catch up with technology. Okay. Is there any questions from the committee?
Okay. Is she lying?
No, she's not lying. I checked her pulse before she started talking. Okay. Anybody else want to talk on this? Thank you. Close the hearing on House Bill 2227. Open a work session on House Bill 2227. Senator Beyer.
Madam Chair, move House Bill 2227 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Beyer has moved House Bill 2227 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Senator Beyer, as this is a government streamlining measure, we will let you carry this bill.
Man, it's taking a statute off the books, man. This is a bill.
Yeah. This is a small government bill.
One less page in the statutes.
Yeah.
Okay. Committee, before we leave, I want to alert you to a couple of things that are pending for the committee. Late breaking news, we may be changing our schedule on Monday to cancel the afternoon judiciary and have an evening hearing on Monday. That would be next Monday.
That's a maybe.
That's a
maybe, or we are.
Maybe a conflict.
That's a probable. That's a probable.
Okay, so it's this coming Monday.
No, let's see. Yes, it's this coming Monday. And then on March 16th is our out-of-town roadshow, and that will be at Lewis and Clark Law School in southwest Portland. Mm-hmm. And we'd love to have you all there. It should be a good event. We're still struggling with what our agenda will be.
Do you have any relatives teaching at that law school? Or?
No, but my the same sister, let's see how if I can get this right, the same sister who teaches law at the University of Oregon, one of the buildings is named after her grandfather. So that's the best I can do at Lewis and Clark.
Madam Chair, wouldn't that also be your grandfather?
No, because it's twins, and they're my half-sisters, so I count them as one sister.
Oh, okay. I'm even more confused now than when I'm not going to ask any more questions.
And it gets even more confusing than that.
Okay.
So I just wanted to alert you, committee. I will be able to confirm by tomorrow whether we're going to do the Monday night hearing. But the March 16th.
What time are you thinking for that Monday?
I'm negotiable on time. Okay. I'd be interested to hear your opinions on what would be a good time. I haven't settled on it.
I got to check with
Do you have any opinions?
I have a conflict with another legislative matter. But
on Monday night?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay, well, we can talk about that after. Okay. So we are adjourned.
I settled by myself.